Hello, this is Patrick Daly and welcome to Interlinks. Interlinks is a program about connections, international business, supply chains, globalization, and their effects on how we live, work, and travel in the world today. And today on the show, we'll be talking to Lisa Anderson, president of LMA Consulting Group in the LA metro area in California in the US. Now, LMA helps clients in the manufacturing sector in the US and elsewhere with a range of different supply chain challenges and opportunities, which is quite opportune right now, pardon the pun, given the geopolitical shifts and the associated supply chain impact. So we're going to be talking about things like coming tariffs, maybe trade wars, the geopolitical uncertainty, and some of the effects of that is giving rise to the diversification of supply chains, stockpiling, maybe regionalization, and so on. But first, I guess, because Lisa is in LA, and I guess unless you've been living under a stone, you will all be aware that there have been tremendous fires in the LA metro area with lots of repercussions. So what's the situation there on the ground from your point of view, Lisa? Is it affecting the whole area, or is it quite localized? How is it manifesting?
Well, it's definitely affected several areas within Los Angeles metro area, and it is devastating for the areas it's affected. Luckily it stayed away from where I am so far, so I'm fortunate. But it's been, very devastating for, it's the worst, certainly the worst fire in the history in this area. Mm-hmm. And, I've heard it compared to the Chicago fire, which was a, historical, it was a fire you hear about growing up as, just horrible in Chicago.
Yeah. I think San Francisco was wiped out by earthquake and fire in the early 1900s as well, I think. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I think you're right as well.
And these fires, I think, have affected kind of the northern suburbs. Is that right? Santa Monica and those?
Well, they've been in multiple places, but there's the Pacific Palisades area is along the coast. So strangely, it's there. And then it, spread to Malibu. And then it's also been in the northern area, which is Pasadena and some areas close to Pasadena. And then it's also been, it's hopped around. It's also went in the valley. So you never know. And it is supposed to, there are Santa Ana winds that are supposed to come back today. So let's hope that we have better control over this, fire, or that we can keep it isolated.
Yeah. And as regards implications, say from a supply chain point of view, both at the consumer level, but maybe also at the kind of manufacturing level, is there any evidence of that going on?
Well, there certainly will be, but no, so far it's been really just focused on the devastation caused, because it's gone through bunches of neighborhoods. So it's more, there's going to be supply chain implications, clearly, because there's like 10,000 plus homes that have been destroyed by the fire. So clearly, if they rebuild all those, all those homes, is going to, it's obviously going to be inflationary, and it's going to cause, supply chain shortages, and certainly they're going to have to build up, they're going to have to do something different about preparing for fires in the future. So that's going to, it'll have a lot of wide ranging supply chain impacts. I know one of the fires actually was near an aerospace and defense client that I have worked with in the past. So either could be some impacts from companies as well, but most of the coverage and most of the fire has been devastating houses so far.
Yeah, I guess it's also going to draw in a lot of construction work and supplies and so on. You'll probably find it difficult to find anybody to do any work in your home, because they're all going to be rebuilding the northern stretches of LA, right?
Yeah, that is very true. Actually, I do know a contractor that works in the Pasadena area, and even before wildfires were ravaging the area, he was already working on fixing people's roofs because they, you know, trees fell in, on the roofs and those kinds of things. So there's like massive, massive damage, massive need to, well, power's been out, you know, there's a lot of things. Like I said, there's going to be a lot of need for construction. There's going to be a lot of shortages of resources and probably shortages of materials to come.
Yeah.
There were shortages of water actually during the fire. So there's lots of problems.
Okay. And next Monday, so we're a week away from the inauguration of the president-elect Trump coming back for a second time. And he's been making a lot of noise about tariffs and other things, which we're all ears in the supply chain world about this. So it's hard to put your finger on the extent of this or the seriousness of it, or whether it's a tactic or whether it's a policy or what exactly it is. But nonetheless, it's already having an effect. So I've been reading a couple of stories. So, you know, I mentioned things like diversification and stockpiling. So I read two stories today. One, that China's exports were at a record high in December. Apparently what's going on there is importers in the US and probably elsewhere are getting orders shipped ahead of time to get them in before these tariffs manifest themselves. So whether they come or they don't come or what extent they're coming, this kind of stockpiling is happening now.
It's definitely they're definitely stockpiling because of tariffs, but also because there was a potential for a port strike in the US.
Yeah, I think that's been averted, right?
It has, but they were, or at least I heard that they worked out an agreement. So far it's been averted. It seems like it will be.
Okay. And how is that showing up? Is it showing up in the ports? Is it showing up with squeeze on warehousing space on the West Coast? Or what's the evidence of it?
Well, it's really mostly just that there's an abundance of logistics movements going on. So sure, you know, they're going to go through warehouses. I haven't, you know, there hasn't been like a you know, a lot of warehouses that are completely short on space necessarily, if you will, but there's been, you know, a massive logistics movement, and it's expected to continue through the first half of the year as you know, all of this you know, as the tariffs get worked out, so people know what to expect. So they definitely are preloading product.
Okay. And is it anything like what we saw post-COVID? You remember when people started coming out of their homes and they were consuming like mad, and there was huge volumes of inventory brought in? Is it something like that?
Well, in this case, it's more of the businesses that are pre-planning product. It's not the consumers. The consumers are still pretty robust. I mean, the consumer spending was up on Black Friday. I think it was around over 10%. And then over the season, it was like over 3%. So, you know, it was definitely up. It just wasn't anything, you know, it wasn't like up 100%, people panicking, none of that. That's not happening. Yeah. Now, to your point, you know, with certain products, now building and construction products seems like it'll continue to be hot. But, you know, it depends on the industry as to what's been needed. But businesses are definitely pre-positioning products this time, because they, you know, I think they've had enough with all the disruptions.
Yeah. Now, and I guess this kind of thing of stockpiling, okay, you can do it once, or you can do it every time there's a threatened increase, to take advantage of the lower side of that cliff, if you like. But it's kind of a one-off knee-jerk reaction.
Right.
But so part of the other things that are going on is this idea of diversification. So another interesting story I picked up on is that some of the big logistics service providers, and mentioned by name, Kuhn & Nagel, CMA, DHL, and so on, they're moving Chinese staff out of China to other parts of the world to help Chinese clients with a kind of China plus one strategy themselves. So Chinese companies that are looking to set up operations in other countries so they continue to supply into the US without being in China. I guess that's one evidence of this kind of diversification. So I'd just like to check in with you. I know there's different elements to diversification. So we may have, say, an American multinationals doing the same thing. So instead of having everything made in China, maybe China and Vietnam or China and Philippines or whatever. So what are you kind of seeing on the diversification front in supply chain terms?
Definitely folks are pursuing diversification strategies. They are pursuing reshoring, nearshoring. There's definitely been, it's actually been quite strange because there's a lot of activity going on, but I don't think anyone knows exactly what to do because there was, you know, some of the large, really large companies, well, actually the Chinese companies were moving to Mexico because they thought they could avoid the tariffs. And then when they heard that Trump was coming into office, there was like a massive stop halt to some of those companies moving into China, to Mexico. I mean, the Chinese companies moving to Mexico. Mm. So I think that, and that really caused some issues because, like, you know, folks who were dependent on, you know, Mexico is booming and then suddenly everything came to a halt, but it was really just the Chinese companies that were moving there that came to a halt. Everything else was continuing on. But if you were, you know, that was significant to the industry though. So, and that's just one example, but I do see that folks are definitely, the smart, proactive companies are absolutely diversifying. So they're looking for, you know, it depends on their product line and it depends on their thinking about the topic, but a lot of them are moving to other areas in Asia that they think will be like Vietnam. Actually, I've heard there's several companies that are like, even Apple is moving to Vietnam. So there's several, and there's other places, the Philippines, et cetera. So they're moving out of China to places nearby. They're definitely moving to India. I mean, it's quite popular. Now they're moving to Mexico. And then they are reshoring as well to the United States. There's more talk of that than there ever has been in the past.
So there may be more of it going on than is being written or spoken about. You would have to think, I don't know what you think about this, but you would have to think, and despite kind of threats of tariffs against Canada and Mexico, you would think that because of where Mexico is and because of the expertise that they have and the experience they've developed, that they are going to be a big winner, if you like, out of this kind of regionalization and nearshoring and friendshoring. What would be your thought on that?
They definitely will, because they have the ability to manufacture and produce at scale, and most countries don't. Since they have some infrastructure, they have, you know, people. So I think that Mexico will definitely be a winner. I do think there is, you know, there's certainly evidence that there's companies moving back to the U.S., certainly not to places like California for the most part, but definitely, you know, like places in the South, and they realize that there's going to be incentives, at least, you know, in certain states, et cetera. And especially in industries where there's like a national defense or, you know, like food, those kinds of issues. So anyway, I think there's, like you said, there's a variety of things happening. There's definitely folks moving to Mexico. There's definitely folks that are moving to other areas in Asia outside of China. Mm. And there's definitely folks who are moving to the US and Canada as well. I mean, you know, to a lesser degree.
Yeah. I think companies, the best companies, are being strategic about it. And those that are not probably should be, because I see, you know, clients of mine, multinational clients, talking about network reviews of where their sources are, what the transport links are between those places, who they're partnering with. So I guess the outcome is, you know, like if you do a review like that with a strategic mindset, you may end up with all of those things happening. So you may bring some back to the US because it's sensitive and you don't want to get yourself into trouble. So you get yourself in under any tariff barrier by actually relocating into the US. And then some might be nearshoring or friendshoring. So you might be looking at Mexico. You might even be looking at Ireland. Ireland exports a lot of pharmaceuticals to the US, and some people here are worried, because the new administration perhaps is looking at universal tariffs, and some of those might affect the European Union. But I'm talking to some multinationals here in the pharmaceutical sector who are kind of looking at Irish plants that have capability and saying, there's some stuff we're doing maybe in Asia or China or India or whatnot. Maybe it'd be better and safer if it was done in Ireland, notwithstanding any tariff there might be for the US. So I guess it's going to be
For sure.
a combination of all of those things, isn't that right?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think it will be a combination of all those items. You just can't move out of China rapidly. I mean, there's just so much scale. I mean, China was the main number one, well, it is still the number one manufacturer in the world. And so you can't just scale back, rapidly. So you're going to have to take, a multi-approach. To go to diversify your source of supply for sure.
I guess as well, sometimes we can over focus on dramatic events, and I guess Trump is a kind of genius of showmanship, and the fact that he said these things is kind of focusing attention on this issue. But there's been lots of other things, and even going back to his previous presidency and before, and maintained through Biden's presidency, the things to do with the environmental impact of strung out supply chains that are kind of global in nature, the rising of costs in places like China, the demographic decline of China. So China as a manufacturing hub, that model may be in trouble to some degree because of labor shortages in the long run. There's some talk even that they have been over-reporting, whether intentionally or by mistake, their actual population. So they're looking into perhaps population quite significant population decline over the next 10, 20 years. And I think you maybe had one or two more examples of that kind of thing.
I do. Yeah, I did some research, and there's definitely a lot of medical, to your point, maybe pharmaceutical as well, but medical companies that are expanding their manufacturing footprint in the US, that are moving, and some foreign direct investment, to your point, that are seeing that they need to to your point, there, it also does relate to labor costs and having labor available.
I guess they don't want that policy anymore, but they can't. They're finding it difficult to dictate to people how many children they should have, and there's lots of people not having any, which is a problem. And I guess an extreme case of that is South Korea. I think they're fertility rate is below one, and I think it takes 2.1 to replace 2.1 babies average per female per woman for population replacement, and South Korea are at 0.8 or something like that. So that means over 20, 30 years, that in effect means population collapse. And because those countries don't really have immigration to substitute for that. As you would in the United States, and maybe to a certain degree the European Union. So it's quite a serious situation.
It really is. There's just a lot of geopolitical threats, and like you said, demographics changing. So it's going to be a very a complex time. I mean, companies have to think about more than just the lowest cost. I mean, they may have been doing that for so many years. They've got to get out of it. It's just not good enough to like say, oh, I'm going to move back, or I'm going to move to I don't know, a South American country or something. But do they have the people? Do they have the natural resources? I mean, water and power aren't things to sneeze at.
This is the thing, isn't it? Because sometimes companies can be quite blinkered, and particularly when they're always looking at cost optimization, and they don't look at anything else. And there was a compelling argument, and you know, a lot of offshoring and outsourcing, all that type of thing. But now to make these decisions, the inputs to the decisions are so much more complex, and organizations that say are populated by accountants and engineers and whatever they have in their staff, they're kind of now having to understand geopolitics and security and cyber threats and compliance. Well, they probably would have had a lot of compliance people already, but you know, those four of those four pillars, and maybe three of those pillars that they wouldn't have had a lot of expertise in. And because the world was kind of in a Goldilocks period, maybe from 1990 to, I don't know, maybe about 10 years ago, didn't really matter. But now they need a whole set of skills and competences that they don't have. And I would imagine, you know, we were talking about Reckitt Benckiser and you know, some of the big multinationals, Apple and so on, you know, they have the resources and the wherewithal. But that next level of companies, particularly in the US, say, you know, the $100 to $500 million type companies, they could be put to the pin of their collar here over the next couple of years. What do you think?
Well, I think you're right. And small mom and pop companies as well. I think it's going to come down to, like you said, the people who have resources, because they're going to have to invest. I mean, you can no longer just like hire people away from other companies. Can you do that? Sure. But it's not going to be, you know, a long-term strategy. You're going to have to build the talent and develop talent to have enough to succeed in the coming years. And to your point, it's just going to be a much more complex situation to navigate. And then lately I've been thinking about, you know, we're going to automate everything that we possibly can, which is going to minimize the number of people. It of course means that you need more high-skilled people and a lot less low-skilled people, which means you also have to like upskill or reskill, you know, workforces. And you have to, it's going to be a challenge. And what do you do about people who are like new to the profession, like entry level? Because if there's those jobs no longer exist, like a basic planner or a basic buyer, it may be that like, I mean, the software is capable of automating those types of tasks.
Yeah. And to automate, so if you're automating a process, say in a logistics process, whether a warehouse or whatnot, you may ultimately need fewer people, or your manufacturing process, you may need fewer people, but the people you do need are different type of cars, a different set of skills. Like I've been working on a number of automation projects in the distribution sector over the last number of years. So in terms of order pickers and people scanning and driving forklift trucks and so on, these companies are requiring fewer, but they are distribution companies, remember, and now they're having to go and recruit people who are mechatronic engineers or IT engineers, and they don't even know how to interview these people, never mind employ them. It's quite a challenge even for them to conceive and specify and procure an automation solution. Can be a challenge. So there's going to be a lot of opportunity for some and a lot of challenges for others. So maybe just to sign off as a closer, what would be your kind of two or three top recommendations for the types of companies that you are already working with or would generally be working with? What would you be saying to them to be doing or looking at for the next year or two as we go into this new world?
Well, I definitely agree with your first point. So they really should be looking to diversify their sources of supply. And they really should be looking to, if they're in the US or in Europe, really, they need to be finding, they need to be moving at least some of it back. So regional, whether it was there or not, they need to be moving some to that region. Mm. So, you know, a regional source of supply, as one of the strategies, should be top of mind. Another one is to keep ahead of all these changing conditions, because things are not going to get simpler as companies start to move around. You know, keeping track of your demand and all these disruptions and sources of supply is going to be tricky. And then, you know, like forecasts are not as simple, of course, as just saying, well, we sold X amount 10 years ago, 9 years ago, eight years ago, et cetera, and trying to figure it out, especially if you change all of your, you know, your sources of supply along the way and the routes of, you know, your supply chain. So from that point of view, like implementing a program like SIOP, sales inventory operations planning, so that you can proactively manage your demand and get in front of changing customer and sales conditions, and then, you know, address your supply so that you can manufacture and have your logistics infrastructure set up in the right places and to be most cost effective during these times. So that would be the second thing I'd recommend is a SIOP process. And then the third is really to invest in talent, because to what we've been saying here, I guess I really do need four, because talent and technology I see go hand in hand. So you really need to be investing in talent, especially the high skill talent, which means you're going to also have to build the talent, as I was saying earlier. So meaning you have to provide additional skills, a lot more than you used to have to do previously. And you need to be also investing in technology, which is tricky because, you know, we're used to just having things available to us, both talent and not having to upgrade technology to the degree that we're having to do it today. So it means that you're going to have more investments. Mm. So you have to plan ahead. You're going to have more strategic finance investments available. You know, you're going to have relationships with trusted advisors, banks, consultants, et cetera. So there's a lot to do, but I would say those are the four things: to diversify supply, regionalize supply, implement a SIOP type process to get in front of these changing conditions, and then invest in talent and technology hand in hand and in concert with one another, so that you have a company that can meet these changing conditions.
Excellent. Some great recommendations, Lisa. And here we are again, beaten by the clock. So we'll have to leave it at that for today. But thanks again for being with us today, Lisa. Thank you.
Great to be here.
And thanks also to our listeners for tuning in again today. And be aware that if you enjoyed this episode, there are over 170 episodes now of Interlinks that you can find wherever you listen to your podcast: Spotify, Apple, Acast, and other podcast platforms. So until next time, keep well and stay safe.